Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 104 of the Alexis L podcast. And I thought we might try and pretend we're a real podcast today by talking about the two big news stories of the week. I've got my guests here, Emily Maitlis and rally car driver.
Hello.
I'm rally car driver. I don't know. I can't even think of a rally car driver
it's
now.
It's Adam Maycock.
Is Adam Maycock really a rally car driver?
No.
All right.
Hi. Hi. Pleasure.
So we're going to be discussing two big news stories of the week. One is got all the people on the Sky News and BBC News very excited. Was Starmer's briefing against Wes Streeting. And the defenestration of Tim Davey and Deborah Turnett from the BBC. I've actually become almost bored. Well, even while I'm talking about it, I'm bored with it, really. But
buckle up, listeners.
Yeah, you're in for a really boring one. 104. It's like a nowhere number, isn't it? Really, it's a well. Okay, so Tim Davey. First of all, we'll start. That fucks me up. You know, there's a in the latest last series, a sandwich bar. There's a bit where Tim Davey comes in and tells me how great I am. So that's I'm the real victim in this. Now he's gone. I mean, fingers are pointing at this fucking shitbag called Robbie Gibb, who's there's a rally car driver just taking off on his motorbike there.
Yeah.
Gibb is a massive Zionist, isn't he?
He was listed
in the pocket of.
Yeah. I mean, you think we're monomaniacs because we think everything is about Israel, but everything is about Israel. I mean, Robbie Gibb was listed as sole owner of the Jewish Chronicle for years, even though he didn't really own it. It was owned by some shadowy gang of Zionists. But I mean, this the Jewish Chronicle, I mean, I think it, you know, is listed as having the most complaints about it, except any publication except the Daily Telegraph. The Jewish Chronicle comes out once a week, whereas the Telegraph is out 7 days a week. It was a big driver of the Jeremy Corbyn false allegations, anti-Semitism smear campaign. Robbie Gibb was, you know, at the center of that, really. And it also makes me laugh. You know, there's all this shit about a Panorama documentary. The Panorama documentary, I think, done in 2019 by John Ware, called in the run-up to the election, Corbyn's election 2019, called Is Labour Anti-Semitic, which was absolutely, I mean, Paul Holden's book, The Fraud, is very good, absolutely full of distortions and misrepresentations. Yeah. I mean, just hundreds and hundreds of them, and nobody made a fuck, well, people on the left did, but they weren't listened to. Nobody made a fucking fuss about that piece of dishonest garbage. So,
Who got sued over that?
Yeah, exactly.
There was also a Conservative MP, and he worked for Theresa May.
He wasn't an MP, he was a speechwriter and advisor.
Director of Communications. Director of Communications, May. And that was during the peak of the Corbyn anti-Semitism and smearing.
Yeah.
His brother was a Tory MP for Bognor Regis.
Okay. I didn't know that. And also this advisor, Michael Prescott, is a very close friend of Robbie Gibb, the one who leaked his report to the Telegraph about the pro Hamas aspects of BBC Arabic, which I'm sure are not true, and the Trump documentary, the edit in that, and you know, just and so, and there's a very good piece actually by Lewis Goodall.
Well, explain some of this stuff. BBC Arabic? I heard about BBC Arabic. They were accused. There have been complaints that I didn't hear that they were pro Hamas, but
no,
just that their reporting was slanted towards sympathizing for Palestine, right?
Yeah, well, I would say what's wrong with that, but
state the facts and it will automatically do that.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So I'm sure it's partly all this is about an attempt to make the BBC is not left wing. It's not even neutral. It's an organization, it's news coverage that replicates the preoccupations of the state, really. And it's never been left wing, and it's nonsense. But even that, like you say, if you occasionally relay the facts about Gaza or Israel, then people will naturally be sympathetic towards Palestine because the facts are so horrifying. And what these people want is for not even the facts to be shared, really, you know, in a neutral kind of way. I think Tim Davie, I don't know, there's a good piece by Lewis Goodall, I think a long thread on Twitter or somewhere, just saying he has no sympathy with Tim Davie, really. He didn't stand up to, to the force of the right-wing press, really. I think he capitulated to them. A sort of a right-wing version of the apologize and move on strategy that Corbyn tried to employ. And the only way ever to deal with these bullies is to stand up to them, which I think Tim Davie kind of failed to do. I don't know. Some people I know who worked with him said he was all right, really. He was nice, but it's...
Well, you met him. He was nice to you, wasn't he, on your show?
Yeah, he was.
And what was this Trump documentary? What happened there?
It was made by an independent. So it wasn't, people say it's made by the BBC, but it wasn't. It was made by an independent. It was a documentary about, suggesting that Trump inflamed the insurrection, the storming of the Capitol on the 6th of January, 2000, and whenever it was, 2000, when he lost the election, indubitably true. He did, claimed that the election was stolen and stuff like that. But they did. It was quite a dodgy edit, really. I think that they edited two bits of his speech, which were actually 45 minutes apart, really, which gave the... impression that he'd urged his followers to go down to the Capitol building and fight, which was a bit of a shonky kind of edit, but the essential thrust of the documentary that Trump encouraged the storming of the Capitol, I think, is indisputable. So there you go. But it's another kind of step on the road to darkness, really, I think, unless the BBC somehow appoints somebody stronger. And Robbie Gibb, the Labour government had an opportunity to get rid of Robbie Gibb when they came to power. They didn't, for their own perverted reasons. Sack him then, because they agree with Starmer and Morgan McSweeney and so on, agree with what he's trying to do with his Zionist ultra capitalist agenda, really. So fucking Lisa Nandy, Jesus Christ, what a fucking piece of shit she is. Culture Secretary.
Are the BBC really that have they really got that limited a choice? Is there only three people they can choose from as director general? Don't they have a wider? Do they have to go for the one? Someone who used to own a very opinionated paper, used to literally work for the Tory Party to be the head of this non-biased.
Robbie Gibby was he was just one of the members of the board. Really, I know somebody who's a member of the board.
Does it have to be someone who's a member of the board?
Well, they choose establishment figures because it's an establishment organization. But no, Robbie Gibb was appointed by Boris Johnson. It was a nakedly political appointment. And if the Labour government I mean, the Labour government is no different to Boris Johnson, so why would they change things, really? You know, it's... And they, I mean, I think that the BBC exists, you know, in a very small geographical and intellectual space, really. It's, you know, people who by and large all think the same. I don't know what the proportion is of its staff who've been to public school. I'm sure it's much higher than the, certainly the senior levels, it's much higher than the national average would be. You know, they all know each other. They all circulate in the same cocktail parties. And you know, it's incapable of really reaching outside. You know, it is very. I mean, like Sami Shah, head of the board, is actually the half brother or step of Mohit, who's head of the BBC, for example. So there's actually BBC Radio 4, head of Radio 4, and somebody who I'd like and has been very good to me. But, you know, it's very small that, you know, that the head of the board of the BBC and the head of Radio 4 come from the same family, really. It's just a tiny, tiny little world that they all inhabit, really. That's why they also get excited about something like this thing with Starmer's people briefing against West Streeton, because it's essentially gossip about their village, you know, their little hamlet that they live in, really. And that's why they love it, really. It matters less to the rest of us, but
we'll get to Starmer in a bit, but I just found this on Wikipedia. In his youth, Robbie Gibb and his brother Nick were recruited and trained by the National Alliance of Russian Solidarists.
All right.
A right-wing Russian anti-communist organization. They acted as couriers and pretended to be tourists in Moscow in order to smuggle letters from dissidents out of Russia. That's...
Really? I mean, I wouldn't necessarily trust Wikipedia, but, yeah.
Little tidbit.
I guess.
And that's from Kirsty Buchanan's Telegraph article, The Senior Tories with Secret Soviet Past.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Oh, well, there you go. Yeah.
That's like, that would have been your enemy, right? When you were kids, you would have been enemies.
Well, yes, although, you know, I hold no torch for the Soviet Union, really.
No.
But, yeah.
That was in 1985. He was 21.
Good for him.
Robbie Gibb. So what is this? But so that's a big shake-up in the BBC. Who else was it that was a...
Deborah Tennis, the head of the
editor of the news, right?
Yeah. I mean, they both get big payoffs, so they probably couldn't be arsed hanging around for more.
Oh, it's a retirement for them, really. They'll be sorted.
Yeah.
Is it an embarrassment for the BBC? Is this is obviously big.
Well,
BBC has always been on really shaky ground in terms of public opinion. You know,
I don't know what the figures are. I mean, people used to trust it. I tell this story sometimes. You know, when I'm doing interviews or you know, book readings about when we did stuff. I think in the first series there was a sketch called Snow White and the Seven Samurai, which ends with Snow White.
Yeah, I remember this one, actually. Yeah. It's one of the ones I've seen, yeah.
Yeah, you know. And after it went out, the Disney organization issued a writ, and so me and Marcus, the producer, and David Nanter, the two other writers, went to see the BBC lawyer, and I was expecting her to be all kind of equivocal and, you know, ipso facto pro bono, you two underneath the law, Pax Vobiscum, in the Act of 18. But in fact, she just said, fuck Disney, we're the BBC. You know, they're always issuing writs, fuck them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that over the year, that was the attitude the BBC had. We're this great national institution and we, you know, dictate the terms on which we exist. And the BBC, I mean, I can't, I mean, it's the, you know, when I mean, I've worked for the BBC for since about 1980, I suppose. So that's what, 45 years. Although I've never had a staff pass, I've always had to argue with some commission head to try and get in the fucking building. Talked about this before, but you know, it was a magnificent organization when I joined it. I mean, shot through with misogyny and racism, so you know, yeah, but then everything was, even the Communist Party. So, I mean, putting that aside, but it had, you know, these, if you had an idea for a sketch that required an elephant, you know, they'd probably have one in stock. They'd, you know, they'd just go to the elephant department and get you a wild animal, get you an elephant, you know, it should be there the next day. I mean, and the makeup, which trained all the great makeup artists for the film, it's the BBC makeup, the wig store, mm-hmm. famous wig store. You know, they just had, there was this big, and then, slowly over time, starting with John Baird, all that stuff was sold off, and so the BBC became diminished, really. And I mean, I suppose, you know, and then and I mean it's also, I mean, I find people in the news really fucking pricks anyway, really, that they are self-important by and large and full of themselves. So I don't have that much sympathy for, you know, I think the real talent lay in light entertainment and comedy and drama, really. And the news were always kind of full of themselves, but people did, you know, it was, it kind of more or less told you the truth, I think, you know. And from a centrist point of view, and I know obviously all that's been whittled away over the years, and it's just partly the slide into whatever it is we live in now, really. I mean, and the funding model is a problem, I suppose, now, that license fee, really. I remember seeing an article, I mean, something like, you know, 30% of the women in women's prisons in Scotland were there for not paying their TV license.
You can go to prison for that?
Used to, yeah. They used to put people in prison, particularly women, for not paying the TV license, yeah.
Jesus.
I know. I don't know what they do now, but it's, you know, it's just, you know, the world is, you know, I mean, the world is fracturing, isn't it? You don't get your news from a single monolithic news source anymore. And obviously they're trying to control, again, it's all about Israel. They're trying to control, you know, TikTok being bought by Larry Ellison, who's a Zionist fanatic, and also bought CBS and installed another Zionist fanatic as their head, and Barry Weiss, and you know, all the fucking, all the big, you know, Meta, you know, all those, you know, really censoring pro-Palestinian voices, all of which I hope won't work, but. You know, I mean, the hobbling of the BBC is all part of that process, really, the gradual slide into autocracy.
You could most certainly say Israel is a brilliant litmus test to see if anyone is a decent person.
Yes, it's a very good, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
So that goes, you know, that does enough, but in a way, it is also all about Israel, because it's just such an important part of the world. And there's a reason why it's these people are fighting tooth and nail, completely demoralizing themselves in order to maintain power over the region.
It is the great moral question of our age, really. You know, which side you stand on that.
And you know, there's been you know, that Palestine has been colonized off and on forever. It's never like, but the people of Palestine have always been there, and they're genetically linked to every people who's always been there. And they've never suffered in the way that we've seen today. That's why it's such a fucking big deal. And that's why everyone keeps fucking going on about it.
Yeah.
So I don't care if anyone's getting bored of hearing about it. Like,
no, to fuck genocide.
You. Yeah. It's important.
Yeah.
It matters.
Yeah.
Fuck
yeah.
off.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting important. A bit sick of it. Why do you keep talking about Palestine? Because it matters, dickhead.
No, you keep talking about the Holocaust. Yeah, it's absolutely. I agree. You're absolutely right. And yes, it's a good barometer of somebody's decency, I think, is how they stand on that issue. Which talking about moral failings brings us to the Labour Party and Starmer and the various shitbags around him. Actually, I'm briefing against Wes Streeting.
This I have nothing. I don't know anything about. I also know this. I heard that there's been like a revolt against Starmer.
Well,
I don't
think
know what this briefing against Wes Streeting means.
I think they were trying means. To. I think Wes Streeting has planned would like to be leader of the Labour Party, and Prime Minister. Starmer's ratings are so low, and he's so useless. He's so incompetent they're trying to. Some people in the Labour Party are trying to get rid of him, really, and hope that that will reverse their fortunes. I don't think that's the case. Really. I think they're, but I hope that they are doomed to oblivion. Really, what will replace them is the problem. Really, I don't know whether it's the Your Party Conference Congress, isn't it? Pretty soon, 29th yes. and the 30th, and we'll see how that turns out. Really, it's not been a particularly edifying spectacle so far, but we will see. But obviously,
easy to say, yeah, they've become pretty irrelevant with the charisma and the dominance of Zach Polanski on the media on almost every show.
Yeah,
be it news, comedy, panel, he's there. Being pretty fucking flawless, charismatic and funny and quick and well rehearsed and good at improvising and charming,
terrific. Yeah,
and gay and Jewish, which gives him points for most people, you know. Which I mean, it's so hard to argue with him about Zionism when you're actually talking to a Jew, and he has a great comeback for anyone who.
Yeah.
Talks about anti-Semitism to him. I'm starting to see him repeat himself. I don't know. What do you think about that when you see a politician on multiple different shows using the same line? I know it's I know it's useful, but there's a point where it's like, okay, I've heard this three times now.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, most people obviously don't pay really any attention, so most people will only hear it once, if that, really. So.
Well, the social media generation, you will.
That's true,
I haven't seen it on TV. I don't watch TV, but I've seen it on my phone.
Right. I don't know what the answer to that is, really.
I was asking your opinion, and then you started getting it, and then I cut you off. So,
just like being on Piers Morgan. I don't know. Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't know what you do about that, whether you say the same thing but in slightly different ways every time, or whether you do, you know. I mean, it obviously worked in the past. You know, Boris Johnson, you know, is oven-ready fucking Brexit deal.
Yeah.
That sort of line, you know. £20 billion black hole. It's something, maybe a politician who you think is honest should vary their responses, really. I don't know. It's a trade-off between the effectiveness of saying the same thing over and over again. And, you know, there's that idea, isn't there, with like a TV advert that you don't really start paying attention to it until you've seen it nine times or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So repeating the same thing is perhaps more effective. I don't know That's what true. The answer to That's that true. Is really. I don't know what, but it is something I wonder about, really. I mean, and with regards to I would like to see your party. I mean, the people, you know, the left. I mean, particularly I'm very keen in this area on Andrew Feinstein. I hope that something good will come out of that as well, really. But I do think some of the people found in this have spent too long in the stinking Labour Party or in the trade union movement. And that's kind of made them essentially anti-democratic, I think. So you know, I'd like to see a young, thrusting organization emerge from the Your Party conference and, you know, see those dinosaurs really kind of sidelined, but we will see what we will see. It's been a depressing spectacle so far, I think.
So what's going on in the Labour Party? Break it down.
I don't know. I don't know really. I mean, it's they're all, I know. I grew tired. I mean, I realized, you know,
So has Wes Streeting got a team behind him?
I imagine he has, really. And he is, you know, he's one day clearly is nakedly ambitious. And but, I mean, Starmer is just so useless that all this has sort of rebounded on him, really. And he won't be. I guess they will get rid of him at some point. The local elections in May presumably will be another bloodbath for Labour, and there will be moves to remove him at that point. Really, I mean, it's annoying because I'm writing this, you know, this book about politics. Really, politics bloody keeps changing every day. So, you know, he may be. You know, I write about Starmer and his dishonesty, but he may be gone by the time the book comes out.
You could weave that in. The first time you mention it, you could weave that into the book and say, maybe, this might not be true by the time the book comes out. So, you know, feel free to replace his name with
somebody else. Yeah.
Or you could even like just say, from now on, whenever I say Mittens or like, you know, a silly name, whenever I say Lord Fluffy, I'm talking about whoever
the current leader just of the Labour fill in the gap. Maybe. I'm at Comic-Con on Saturday. That's finally come around.
Are you going to be sat at a desk signing autographs?
I assume that's what they're paying me for. I don't know why else they would have me there. I mean, if they just want to have me there to sit in a chair eating baked goods, I'd rather do that. But I expect I'll be signing autographs. Tim... Tim McInerney's going to be there apparently, and Adrian Edmondson is going to be there. So I am informed whether we'll meet or not. I don't know whether that is in the same.
Oh, I hope you say hi and you have a nice moment.
Yeah, sure. Well, Tim's a friend of mine, and Adrian I feel great affection for. So if we see them. It's a long time since I've done one of these things, really, but...
That's an easy gig. Easy enough, right? You've just got to sit
It's just
a bit... It must be tiring.
It's a bit humiliating as well, really, selling you. But, you know, it's fine, really. It'd be interesting to see how my fame stood up. I suppose I don't know why I'm there. So Indiana Jones and Doctor Who, I suppose, are my Comic-Con credits, really. I don't know whether there's any more to it than that.
Let's see. I have got your IMDb preloaded up.
That's my IMDb. My IMDb is well out of date, isn't it?
Was The Thief Lord based on a comic book of any sort?
No, it was written by a woman called Cornelia Funke, who's the German... J.K. Rowling.
Oh, my God.
Apparently. That film probably didn't do her reputation any good at all.
No, Reckless Kelly wasn't a comic book, was it? That was just...
No, it's not comic books, really. I mean, I don't know that I've ever been. It's more just, you know, it's just big franchises, isn't it, that I've been in, really. I think that's the interest. I don't know, maybe it's just general celebrity. I don't know what the attraction is, but you know, the guy asked me to do it, so I'm doing it.
Yeah. Okay, good luck.
Thank you. The car's coming at 8:20 to pick me up.
Oh my god, Saturday morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'll be the day this comes out. You can listen to it on the drive.
Yeah. We were talking about Labour Party workers.
Yeah, Wes Streeting's on the cabinet, right?
Yes, he's health secretary.
Prime Minister says he never authorised attacks on cabinet members after briefings from Number 10 that Health Secretary Wes Streeting was mounting a leadership bid. So what? I'm sorry, what is a briefing? What is that?
Just really just whispering, people going and saying, psh, 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 psh. It's briefing is just somebody, presumably Morgan McSweeney or one of his, Starmer's other umpa lumpers, just going to the lobby journalists like, you know, Koonsberg or Beth Rigby right. or Chris Mason and chatting shit about them, you know. Like okay. a kind of diss track. Is it a diss?
Yeah, doing a diss track, a public.
Yeah.
Shaming.
It's kind of like that, but.
And it's like saying, we see you kind of thing.
Yeah.
Watch it. We're here.
But it's very, I mean, I think it's an odd thing, an aggressive thing for.
But if Starmer didn't authorise it, then it's technically a leak.
Well, Starmer says he didn't organise it.
Well, speaking to MPs at Prime Minister's questions on Wednesday, Starmer said, I've never authorised attacks on cabinet members. I appointed them to their post because they're the best people to carry out their jobs.
Yeah.
He criticised the briefing as unacceptable.
Well, Starmer is a proven liar, though. I mean, we know he lies about everything, so why wouldn't he be lying about this?
It's very two-faced, isn't it? Kemi Badenoch, Conservative leader, said that Starmer's government has descended into civil war. I can't do an impression of her.
No. Because all they were good at was getting seizing control of the levers of power within the Labour Party and then kind of getting rid of anybody who even mildly disagreed with them. Even people on the soft left or the centre they got rid of, like Neil Lawson of Compass, very kind of Blairite. So they just, all they can do is conspire. That's all that they're good at really because they're sneaks and liars and they're dishonest. And all that works for them, they can't govern the country or provide moral leadership. All they can do is conspire and stab each other in the back. And that's, you know,
Streeting denies it. That's what we've got
in charge. Yeah.
Streeting denies it as well. But he did say, what we've seen from Downing Street overnight are a series of categorically untrue briefings. Whoever's behind this has been watching far too much Celebrity Traitors.
Contemporary reverence. Or something that happened weeks ago. It's a sad situation. And it's getting more and more absurd.
You've been watching too much boy band Dreamland or whatever it's called. What was it called?
Boy band forever.
Okay. So there are rumours of a possible coup in the Labour Party.
Yeah.
And people threatening others to remain loyal to the true leader.
Yeah.
It's
all fucked, really. I just want to say, by the way, if I don't know, really, if they want the Director General of the BBC, I suppose I'm available. I suppose I'd take it on, even though I don't want to.
Certainly don't do it. Someone who literally used to work for a political party.
He'd have to go. Oh, bloody bored. I'd have to go, really.
They should just think outside the box on this.
Yeah.
They should just, actually, you know what? Just get a Palestinian.
Yeah.
To do it.
Yep. I agree. Do you know this guy? There's a Death to the West Midlands. There's Arab comedian got a good, reasonable review in The Guardian. Is he a mate of yours?
Hassan Al Habib. Yes, yeah. I've gigged with him a few times. Oh, has that caught your eye, has it?
I don't know. Yeah, it stayed up on the Guardian culture page for quite a few days. It's only a three. They only give it 3 stars, but the headline is complimentary.
He's playing the Soho Theatre, so fuck him.
Yeah. We don't go there.
We are absolute fucking traitor.
Even though I get free coffee and sit under my poster, I don't go there anymore.
So his parents were refugees from Baghdad, and they moved to Birmingham. Yeah, Hassan Al-Habib. He's called Humorous Arab on Instagram. Yeah, I've gigged with him a few times. Lovely bloke. Lovely guy. Funny. You know, I don't want to say anything else. He's funny enough. But I think, you know, this is an example of how, you know, it's so rare for an Arab to get any fame and to get any media attention in this way. And there's there is a very firm line you have to walk in order to do it. So, if you know what I mean, you know, there's certain things you talk about and certain things you don't, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, his comedy's fine, but it's nothing like, nothing that's going to make you go, wow. That's fucked. That's awesome. You know, nothing divisive going on.
Well, I suppose maybe the world needs that as well.
But I'm happy. And to be honest, this is the thing, though, because I'm torn. I'm saying that as if it's a horrible thing.
Yeah.
But I want to celebrate any Arab who does elevate themselves. And that alone is a form of resistance, of a form of defiance.
Yeah.
Your existence in a public sphere is in itself a statement. And I think being Arab, your sympathies can be inferred or implied without you having to be, without you having to be tacit about it. Was that the right
explicit
word?
Explicit. No, explicit.
Explicit, the opposite of tacit.
Yeah.
So, and also there's probably a thread of envy, of jealousy.
Yes, I'm glad you admit it.
You know, I'm happy for it, but playing the Soho Theatre kind of nullifies a lot.
Yeah, at the same time.
That's it.
I've got anything else to discuss? I've grown bored with this. I hope people enjoy it. You feel like you always think when you're watching other people on, I suppose I would be, you're watching watching Sky News or something, you think you'd do better than the people who are on, but then now when I try it, it's, you know, subpar, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a reason why media training exists and stuff, but, you know, you should know, you should have.
Yeah, I'd be more focused, wouldn't I? If I was on Sky News, I'd be more focused.
Yeah. Really. No, I should have better questions for you to get some good answers.
No, it's all my fault. It's not your fault. It's my fault.
Where does the buck stop?
The buck stops here with me. It's the Alexis L podcast.
Have you heard of Al-Thawabet?
No, what are they?
Okay. What are Al-Thawabet? Yeah. Al-Thawabet meaning constants. Are the core uncompromising principles of the Palestinian liberation struggle. Now, I'm reading this. I'm not trying to lecture here. I'm just reading something. Okay. Yes. It's the core uncompromising principles of the Palestinian liberation struggle. So these red lines established by the Palestinian National Council in 1968 represent the demands on which there can be no sacrifice. They have been upheld for decades as the foundation of Palestinian resistance and national identity. There's a reason I'm bringing this up, okay? But I'll just read to you the five core principles, okay? On which, if you want to call yourself a Palestinian resistance activist, you should not ever waver on any of these five.
Okay, all right. Am I doing this? Is this a test?
I suppose it's a test.
Yeah. Yes.
Number one.
Yeah.
The right of return for all Palestinian refugees.
Yeah, I go along with that.
No arguments there. Number two, restitution and compensation for the dispossession endured.
Yes, I would go along with that.
Yeah.
I would also say this is an interesting point because one of the, you know, there were a lot of Jews, like, you know, the, who were dispossessed for, you know, in the 30s, you know, because Arab, you know, had their businesses seized in like Iraq, you know, the Sachis and the Yentobs and those sort of Sephardic Jewish families. I wonder whether you should, they shouldn't be restituted as well. Because that's one of the things they'll, you know, I mean, that was, it was caused by, it wouldn't have happened if Israel wasn't about to come, you know, the, those governments in like Iraq could see what was going to happen. And so they, and I think in Egypt as well, yeah. Jews had their businesses seized and were expelled, and that was wrong as well. And perhaps that should be also, restitution absolutely. Should be a part of.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you know, the, yeah, I'm not disagreeing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the Jewish communities from the Arab world felt the need to flee because of Zionist terrorism.
Yes,
triggering fear across and the Middle East.
I mean, they did, the Zionists did plant division. Bombs in mosques and stuff, didn't they? And then
yes,
trying to false flag operations. Yeah.
It is listen, mad to me that, you know, all of this, because of the Holocaust, and in a way the Nazis won because they got rid of so many Jews by creating Israel. The Nazis didn't create Israel, but by the creation of Israel.
Yeah, yeah, you know, it is a victory. Israel is a victory for Nazism, I agree. All right, so restitution too.
Conversation, yeah. And in America, what do they give to their ex-slaves or descendants of slaves? It's 5 acres and a donkey or something, or 2 acres and a donkey.
Yeah. 2 acres and a mule.
That was the Spike Lee production company.
Yeah.
And what's the word for that?
Well, apart from shit, I mean...
yes, apart from... No, the word for...
Well, restitution. Is it
just restitution?
That's a great episode of Atlanta, that one where kind of fantasy, have you seen where the restitution bill?
I haven't.
Passed. It's fucking brilliant. I mean, there are, I mean, Donald, I'm bad with names today. Who's Atlanta? You know, Childish Gambino.
Donald Glover.
Donald Glover. His career has been a bit, on and off since then, but fucking hell, Atlanta. There are some episodes of that series I would recommend anybody, of Atlanta, that are just some of the greatest television of the last decade or whatever.
He's a great artist though, and I do respect that he just kind of follows his creative whims, and he has such a broad span of creativity and, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Smith to his music.
Yeah, Mr. and Mrs. Smith was a bit...
It was fine, though. It was entertaining. But yeah, it started off strong. Reparations was the word I was looking for.
All right, okay. All right, number three.
Number three. The right to resistance in all its forms.
Yeah, I mean, and that's something... I think that can get you locked up, can't it, to say that, you know, that Palestinian... Palestinian resistance is legitimate resistance, but it's enshrined in the Geneva Convention, as I understand it. So, yes, I agree.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And that word resistance, though, you've got to look up the definition of resistance and, you know, do that. It's not not just any old thing. You can't, you know, resistance.
Yeah.
You've got to pick your fucking targets and pick your... but, yeah, right to resistance, we're behind that. If you're occupied, if you're a victim, you have the right to fucking resist.
Yeah.
All right. Number four, full self-determination over Palestine from the river to the sea.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, I don't know what that implications are for the state of Israel. I mean, I suppose that implies one state, really.
And this, it shouldn't be at the, like, to avoid being a fucking hypocrite, it shouldn't be at the cost of others?
No.
Obviously, after once justice has been served, and you know, this is what people don't understand. When people say from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, it doesn't mean wipe out all Israelis. If you create a democracy in that land, the Palestinians will outweigh the Israelis.
Yeah.
And democracy will prevail.
Yeah.
And
I'm on board with that.
You know, if you are born there, or your parents were born there, that I don't think people should necessarily be kicked out, but naturally they're going to want to leave because Israelis are so racist against Arabs. And if they become the majority, they're going to be like, oh yeah, okay, let's get out. Let's go back to New York. Let's go back to Warsaw. Let's go back to...
Yeah.
No, full determination over Palestine from the river to the sea.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck yeah. Okay, number five. Rejecting all forms of colonialism, normalization, and occupation.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm very much against that. You might not know this about me, but I'm very much against all forms of colonialism. Mm-hmm. You may be surprised if you're listening to this first, come on this podcast expecting gardening or something. Yeah, occupation, yeah.
What about normalization?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Am I for or against that?
That's what I'm asking. That's what I'm asking.
What's the right answer? I'm normalization of occupation and colonialism. I'm against that.
Why are they important? Al-Thawabet is essential for the Palestinian liberation movement because it embodies the core non-negotiable principles that unify Palestinians in their pursuit of justice, self-determination. Activists. So, for example, Nizar Banat, activist, criticized leader of the Palestinian Authority, the PLO, who compromised these principles for the sake of political expediency.
Yeah.
So we're getting to the point I want to
get. That's another. All right. Oh, there is a point to this, isn't it?
Yes.
All right.
Abandoning the Al-Thawabet equates to betraying the collective aspirations of the Palestinian people and weakening the resistance against occupation. What were you going to say, though? You had something to say there?
No, I was just saying, the Palestinian Authority, they're another bunch of old shitbags who should be retired.
Okay. So, non-Palestinians, here's how you can uphold Al-Thawabet.
Okay.
Stand firm in your right to resist by any means necessary. Reject all forms of normalization with the Zionist entity, whether through partnerships, debates, panels, or peace talks that undermine Palestinian demands. Always prioritize liberation over compromise. And I think this... So it's that normalization issue... is kind of where I'm coming to, because people are accusing Mehdi Hassan, and even Zoran Mamdani of being Zionists.
Because of what?
Because they are not strictly adhering to these five rules.
Well, the normalization. Mamdani says, you know, when they say, do you believe in, Israel has a right to exist, he says it has a right to exist, you know, as a state where all people's rights are respected. That seems pretty unequivocal as well.
Precisely that, Alexei. And so does Mamdani come at you with that same response.
Yeah,
this is a diplomatic response in order not to be called an anti-Semite, not to be called that you're calling for ethnic cleansing yourself, because this is what people say to you if you give any other answer. But also, the word is not as important as the people. The word Palestine, Israel, like I said earlier, Palestine has been occupied, colonized forever and ever. It's only today that we're seeing the most cruelty.
Yeah.
Inflicted upon the Palestinians. Yeah. And it's had many names. But Palestine is a people, not a, it's not a flag. It's not a name. there are, that's, that is how you can represent the people and represent the land, but it's the people that fucking matter more than anything, right?
Yeah.
But people are attacking Mamdani and Hassan,
for God's sake,
calling them, literally calling them Zionists.
Who are these
because
people?
Of this exact, because of that precise argument that they make.
Well,
which is a matter of perspective, isn't it? If they're saying, yeah, okay, Israel has a right to resist, it's a concession for them, but it's like, for me, it sounds like they're frustrated when they say, they're like, yeah, okay, it has a right to resist, like, but it has to be democratic and everyone has to have the equal rights, and the right of return is important. That's never a question.
No. I would just say to those people who are attacking Mehdi Hassan and Soran Mamdani, stop it. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. These people are on our side. We can't have these purity tests.
I think Al-Thawabet are five very easy to agree with principles, and it's important. But to call someone a Zionist on such a...
You never know really whether, you know, what is the motivation behind some of this. Whether it's just the sort of people who are puritanical in their viewpoint. They can't, everything has to be 100% pure or they can't follow it. But it, I think that kind of fanaticism and puritanical viewpoint just undermines our movement, I think. We have to, you know, we have to be inclusive and, you know, we have to work with our, you know, we see an ally as an ally and not try and invent reasons to exclude them, so we can be a very pure and, you know, ideologically rigid movement of 17 people. That's what grinds my gears.
It is fucking miraculous that Mamdani is where he is now, and he should be fucking...
People try it, and you wonder some of them are
grateful,
not,
but
you know.
There is a spanner all through the West. Do you hear about the police chief? That he announced that he would retain the current chief of police.
Yeah.
Who is the biggest pro-Israel... advocate. Just getting her name now. Jessica Tisch.
Right.
Who is a horrid
daffodil.
And her dad is a huge Israel supporter and fountain billionaire funder of Israel. So NYPD
I'm calling her a daffodil, I think.
You what?
Are we allowed to do... Can you call her a daffodil?
Why not?
I don't know. I don't know what the rules are these days.
It's not defamation if it's true.
No, I just wonder whether it offends our listeners.
Oh. Well, she's chief of police. Fuck the police.
Yeah, ACAB. Just using that word on that. Okay.
I'll put a beep on it then. I'll beep it out. Sorry, listeners. I'll use the most annoying beep. Actually, Alexi, give me a word I can replace it with. And I'll put your voice over it.
Annoying.
No, make it something funny. Daffodil.
Daffodil.
Say daffodil clearly. Give me a clean
daffodil.
Take on. I was talking over you one more time.
Asking me to be funny. I think this podcast has proved irrevocably I can't be funny on these topics. Daffodil.
Okay, great. I'll put that in. So that is concerning. Is he making a concession to keep some people happy or to maintain his position? Or is he a secret Zionist? Don't think I'm naive and don't think I'm not going to be keeping an eye on this Mamdani fucker.
Yeah, well, I suppose you have to make compromises. I don't know. We will see.
Can't be easy.
I remain optimistic as of today. Yeah.
Let us remain optimistic, despite how that's bitten us in the ass countless times and probably every time we've ever thought about being optimistic.
Let's stick with that losing strategy.
Well, this, the first sign of insanity.
Doing the same thing over and accepting a different result, yes.
Let's stay optimistic. Oh my God, it's such a messy fucking world, isn't it?
It is.
You know, I can't even like my favorite bands anymore.
Stephen Wright, isn't it? It's a small world, but I wouldn't like to paint it.
Can I just say a quick thank you to the White Kite Collective? I've been involved in two of their projects over the last week.
Zainab, yes.
Yes, Zainab. Shout out Zainab and Joel Samuels and Ruth and Tahrid and the rest. On Saturday, we did a very powerful performance at Stratford East, and a bunch of us actors were reading writings from Gaza, from wider Palestine as well. And then just last night, that was at Queen Mary University in their theatre department, in the Pinter Studio Theatre, and we performed four plays written by Gazans, three of whom are still living in tents in Gaza, and they'd sent these plays off. They were given a brief of write whatever the fuck you want and we'll perform it. And they sent over four plays. And it was nice to tread the boards again, be in a play, four. And it was just very, very meaningful. And I'm very grateful to get to perform these works. It's not even patronizing because they're fucking great. These plays were so well written. And to think you can be an artist. I wanted to briefly just touch on the power of art in times of struggle, in times of resistance, in times of war. I wanted to see your thoughts on that. So these guys are living in a tent with shelling going on around them.
Yeah.
They're sitting down writing a play.
Yeah.
And it's remarkable. And they're great. Yeah. A great place.
Yeah.
Art as a weapon, art as resistance. Have you got any thoughts on that?
I think it's a good thing. I think it's really good. Art as resistance. I don't know. I think it's a good thing.
How important is art in times of war? In times of
I don't know.
Times like these.
I don't know. I think it's probably really important.
That's not fair. You know what? I'm coming at you hot from a very passionate and fiery environment.
I think
this was on the tip of our tongues.
I have to.
I'm attacking you in the basement of your house and
expecting me to come up with stuff.
Oh, okay, I'll say it. It's fucking vital, you know. Yeah. It allows us to say things that you're not allowed to say.
Yeah, well, in a different sort of way. Yeah, I actually went to a sort of book reading and discussion at Hausmann's Left Wing Bookshop about this German woman had written a book called Bourgeois Coldness, which is about how, you know, you have to be cold. You have to, you know, to live in this world in a way you can't. You know, there are so many terrible things going on and how people develop a kind of coldness to get through, really. It was a very interesting discussion. It was very high-end kind of philosophy because the woman who interviewed her and the woman who wrote it were both professors of philosophy. So there was a lot of talk of Adorno and the Frankfurt School and kind of post-war European philosophy. But I thought, well, wouldn't it be great if this was all in a play? It'd be great if these ideas, which I'm explaining very badly, if they were all in a play, they'd be great. And I was thinking Adorno was a huge fan of Samuel Beckett. And I've been thinking a lot about Beckett. I don't know why really. But, you know, you see, I think, really the most profound philosophical ideas, ideas of existentialism, but expressed in a theatrical production which contains humor and drama. And
yeah,
I just think Beckett is extraordinary, really.
All right, let me just quickly plug our Patreon, please. If you want to support the show, this is a grassroots independent production. We never want to have adverts on this show. Help us keep that a reality. Go to patreon.com/AlexisLPodcast. Chuck us a couple quid a month. It means so much to me, all the people who are already there supporting the show. You get exclusive content on there. You get to see the full video episodes of the Alexisel podcast. You get to see Alexi, Lisa, and Nigel watching the young ones. Alexi went to a shooting range and shot off some massive guns. And you can see all the work I put into our D&D episode. Go to patreon.com/AlexisHellPodcast and join the community there. Join the chat room and message me. I read those messages before I read anything else. Me and Alexi really appreciate it.
I promise I'll be better next week.
No, you were great, Lexi. You were fantastic.
Was I?
No, you were really good. Please.
I don't think you're wonderful. No,
look, Alexi. Come on, let's go to the living room. They've got some apple crumble in there with some custard. You want some crumble and custard?
Are they taking us to the zoo?
Yes, that's on Tuesday.
We're going on a bus to the zoo.
Yes, we're going on a bus.
Oh, 73. We're playing the charity football match with the Prime Minister.
Come on, Alex, say bye-bye. Come on, let's go.
Bro was big in the 80s.
Yes, yes, he was. Come on, do you want the custard?
All right, sounds nice. Bye-bye. You've been listening to the Alexisel podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkouti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexiselpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.